Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough roads to get up to 88.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
It's the era VDI!
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 96. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, welcome back from Barcelona, my friend.
Oh, I am surrounded by boxes. I completed 6 weeks of travel and then bought a house. And
that's
moved.
Right.
And it was an adventure finding this microphone.
So. Yeah. How's the new house?
It's good. Actually, now that I'm listening to myself in this room, I think we may need some acoustic panels in here. It might get a little echoey.
You got a big house now. You should have like a whole room dedicated to the studio, man. Make it happen.
You know, there is a bedroom that doesn't have windows. And I'm
good luck telling your wife you need a podcast studio. Let me know how that works out for you.
I'm like, well, you know, the real estate agent's like, well, this should be like a nursery. But I'm like, yeah. Podcast studio / full VR, like 3D VR room scale rooms.
Whatever. I love it. Yeah. All right. Well, John, we're back from Barcelona. We had a week off to relax. And here we are, man. We have made a collection of excellent conversations that we're going to share throughout the next couple of months. And one of the ones I've been looking forward to sharing with everybody was a conversation that we had at VMworld Vegas. We talked about VDI with a couple of guys that are VDI experts, Mr. Johan van Amersfoort and Mr. Marco van Bagum. Now, Johan, also known as Bearded VDI Junkie, just came out with a book. He actually released it around VMworld Vegas. It's called The VDI Design Guide. And so we had a conversation with him and Marco, who also helped in the book. And then when we went to Barcelona, we had another conversation around VDI with Brian Madden, which was really fun. And so I thought this would be a really cool way to bring these two conversations into one big VDI podcast. What do you think of that, John?
I like it. Two of my favorite, we've got old school VDI guy who's like there from the beginning.
Yeah.
And then one of the leading architects of our day here. So this is, we got old and new school here.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, let's start with the conversation we had in Vegas with Marco and Johan. So take a listen.
All right, well, joining us now on VMworld 2018 are two gentlemen direct from the Netherlands, Johan and Marco. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having us.
How's your VMworld going so far?
It's mind-blowingly awesome.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Details.
It's insane. Well, you guys, I released the book a couple of weeks ago, and normally VMworld is all about getting more knowledge and obviously networking, but...
Yeah.
Since the book is released, I'm doing a lot of promotion.
Okay.
And today I did some book signing on the booth of NVIDIA. Oh man, it's insane how people are enthusiastic about the book. And I never expected that, to be honest. You know, you'll always hope for a positive vibe, but it was at the first day at the bookstore, it was completely sold out.
Oh yeah.
So I had an additional stock that was sold out this afternoon, and we're only on day two, so it's...
Dude, this community is hungry for knowledge. I mean, that's why we do these podcasts, because these are really smart people that want to continue their education and learn, and so I'm not surprised by that at all.
I actually, as soon as I saw that it was available for order, I was like, all right, I need this, and it's actually on my nightstand back at the hotel. This is a great book. So as a recovered, recovered VDI guy, who, that's actually what my VCP was in originally... I've always said VDI is this dark art, and it's easy, right? You just take Windows 7, you put it on a VM, and you clone it a couple times, right? That's no, but it's there's so many nuanced design decisions, and this book captures all that stuff without it being 4,000 pages somehow. It's this is definitely a must read.
Ah, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
And you also came packing with some awesome t-shirts, too. This is the guy that has the Year of VDI t-shirt that looks like Back to the Future.
That is
fantastic.
Yeah.
No, I love it.
Hunting the t-shirts.
The running joke of when will be the Year of VDI. But no, it's...
You win the t-shirt contest this year.
Ah, thanks.
this is the best we've seen. But I want to talk on two things in the book real quick. And one misconception I see a lot is people say, I still see people trying to do full clone VDI. And they say, well, we need it for persistence. And I'm seeing some already cringing going on, you know, and you guys get it. I'll let you explain. What's your take on that?
Well, persistence is OPEX heavy in general. So you want to avoid that as much as possible. And with technologies introduced in the last couple of years, such as instant cloning, app volumes, writable volumes, the acquisition of Imidio, so user environment manager, you're able to create a persistent user experience in a non-persistent way. So
have your cake and eat it too here.
Yeah, so. That's it. Yeah, that's it. I would say that 90% of all use cases could become non-persistent just by leveraging the standard techniques that are available in Horizon Enterprise and making the best out of it.
No, it's something to where for the longest time I always saw dedupe of like, oh, dedupe solves the overhead problems of doing full clone. And I'm like, I love you, that term of it's OPEX heavy, because the amount of labor that's involved if you're operating full and just manually doing that clone stuff is you're doing it now with all the complexities of being in a data center and virtualized, and you're layering that on top of basic desktop management. You're missing out on all the benefits of why people thought VDI was cool in the first place.
Yeah, totally true. And when introducing applications, it becomes even more complex. And, you know, especially dedupe in combination with a non-persistent VDI is powerful.
Instant clones, by the way, which I think those things were amazing. The first demo I saw of it was like 3 years before it shipped, and I was like, when is this coming? But that's... Are you seeing a lot of adoptions or having a lot of conversations around it?
Yeah, since there is almost a feature parity between link clones and instant clones currently.
We got vMotion, we got GPUs. Yeah, so.
We got all of it. I'm not really seeing a lot of use cases for link clone anymore.
Yeah. No, it's like, let me muse here and think, maybe we should just deprecate it.
Yeah. I work at a partner, so I don't work at VMware. It won't surprise me if it'll be deprecated.
So you and Marco work for the same consultancy firm, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So, Marco, what are the top mistakes you see people make when making a VDI design?
So, for my part of the writing the book, helping Johan with the book, was more around security design and the NSX part. Most issues that I see with the design around the NSX part is that they started wrong. So Johan starts the book with the question, why? What are you trying to do? What problem are you trying to solve? And people are just using NSX. I want to have microsegmentation, but what's the problem that you're trying to fix?
Yeah. So could you have done that with a PVLAN if you just didn't want them to talk to anything? I mean,
if you want to have a lot of overhead
for
operations, Yep.
That's what we did back in the Stone Ages before NSX.
Exactly. So you could really solve issues there. So one of the best features that I think the microsegmentation is, we have a use case where you want to segregate all the traffic for specific business units to specific applications. Then you can really see the benefit of NSX. And you need to start it really, really soon.
Tie security to the org chart.
Yeah, exactly.
And integrate to the network seamlessly. Yep. No, that's some cool stuff. But yeah, I like that start with why, because that's something to where I've seen a lot of people say, well, we're doing VDI to improve OPEX, but then they start doing full, or they do something else, and it's let's try to work backwards from an outcome rather than start with, you know, let's build a Rube Goldberg machine of desktops.
So I have a question. VDI has been around for a while, and obviously there's the running joke, the year of VDI, the year of VDI, almost to the point where it's like, really? Is it really? What do you think has been sort of the inhibitor, if you will?
Yeah, well, yesterday Brian Madden did a session called Is VDI Dead? And with another quote from Sean Bass, your CTO on EUC, who says that, you know, if there's a nuclear war, three things will happen. We still have cockroaches. he mentioned something else, and the last one was we still have traditional Windows apps. And
So true.
As long as we have those and we have a requirement for a Windows operating system, I believe that VDI will always have a place.
It's having those conversations, you know, we can talk to the PKS guys in chat about all the DevOps hipster, oh, we're refactoring and doing all that. Yep. But there's in a decent sized company, there's a lot of apps that you don't own the code.
Yep.
And this app is valuable, but it's valuable to three people. And I'm not going to go spend $500,000 rewriting this
exactly.
thing.
Exactly.
So we keep it running?
And it's got some... And then eventually, you know, it's one great analogy I've heard for, you know, people say, well, it's a legacy app. But that legacy app has weird dependencies. They've got it. They may not age well. Maybe like, you know, cheese you leave out. And so, you know, thin app volumes, these things that help you deal with those applications after the nuclear war that are going to zombie on forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, NSX be able to secure that. There's a lot of value here in this regard.
Yeah, so. And with all the latest technologies, we could migrate from a monolithic desktop, which we have now, yep, towards a completely layered entity, you know.
The profiles are layered, the app groups are layered.
Everything is layered. You can easily mix and match and upgrade individual layers if you would like to, and that makes it a lot simpler and less OPEX heavy. So, yeah, that's definitely something that we take into account in every project. But like you just mentioned, you know, replatforming of applications. If I was a company right now and I could invest a lot of money in technology, why would I invest in VDI? You know, if I could invest in the same amount of money in replatforming my applications, so they would also always be like modern applications that I could run on each device without having an expensive VDI,
right,
I would definitely go for that way.
Yep. But the reality is people want to focus 90% of their spend on the 10% of the apps that they can do the most with that refactoring and do execute well. And let's have this to deal with the maintenance on the rest of it, so to speak.
So I didn't catch the name of the book. I know it's on VDI. What is the name of the book?
VDI Design Guide.
VDI Design Guide. Easy enough. That's easy to remember. We'll definitely put a link to that on the show notes of the podcast for this episode. And
awesome.
Pete's totally going to do this with his Amazon referral link. So he can
bro, I am now.
Skim 10 cents off every year.
Johan, Marco, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having us, guys.
All right,
thanks.
See ya.
Yeah, so that's Marco and Johan. John, as we're recording this podcast right now, I am definitely wearing that shirt that we talked about, the Year of VDI. I really like that shirt.
It is amazing. Like it really sums up where we're at with, I think it's the year of Linux VDI on ARM processors, right?
Yeah.
And I just love that conversation we had because it's one I've had so many times. It always starts with people on the storage side saying, yeah, I'm trying to make 400 full clones. And I'm like, wait a minute, what are you doing? And we get into that misconception that a persistent VDI experience requires the desktop actually stick around and not be, you know, torched with fire.
Yeah.
You can have, you know, new desktop smell every morning from the infrastructure layer while still, you know, keeping that background and keeping those app settings. We've got the tooling. It's time to deploy modern VDI.
Well said. Well said. All right. Well, the second conversation I want to share with you is one that we had back in Barcelona about a couple of weeks ago with Brian Madden. Now, you may remember Brian Madden. He's got brianmadden.com would be one way. He also wrote that book, The VDI Delusion, and he joined VMware less than a year ago. He's working in the end user compute, of course. And we had a fantastic conversation with him. I mean, about just about everything, about VMworld, about VDI, some of the misconceptions, the book, and just a whole bunch of stuff. Man, that was a fun conversation.
Well, and what I really love is, you know, if you ever want to go back in time and read The VDI Delusion,
yeah,
you need to also go pick up Johan's book, VDI Design Guide, because they really actually dovetail together of, you know, Brian Madden's original valid complaints about the limitations of VDI back in the day. And then now, as even he'll admit, seeing Johan's book outlining, you know, how we solve those challenges today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So here's Brian Madden. Take a listen.
Brian, welcome to the podcast and welcome to VMware.
Thank you. Longtime listener. First time guest.
I love it. I love it.
Like it.
So how's your VMworld going so far?
It's good. You know, VMworld is such a different experience as an employee, which is interesting because in some ways it's like you're more alone here because your whole team is all super busy and they're all scattered 100 directions.
Exactly.
Like at brianmadden.com or TechTarget, it's like, you know, we're just rolling around.
You travel as a posse to sessions. And I did that one as a partner. Yeah.
Yeah. But there's no posse. It's just very busy the whole time.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's good. This is actually my first time to VMworld in Barcelona.
And that makes sense because obviously if you're not working for VMware, you're probably going to go to the Vegas show.
Yeah. And then we send Jack, who is the low man on the totem pole, to Barcelona.
Hey, baby. Sorry, brother. Jack. Can you? Yeah, we're going to ship you overseas and hopefully not get caught in Spanish customs like our shirts. So.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Welcome to Barcelona.
Yeah, thank you.
I was going to ask you, I understand you had a community event last night.
Yeah. And it's funny because it was a community event at VMworld and people are like, wait, so it wasn't a VMworld event? I'm like, no, to be very clear, not a VMworld event because we had beer and we had no slide disclaimers, no approvals.
Nice.
So there were seven speakers, like 15 minutes each. over 2 hours. Now, we started a little bit late because it was scheduled to the EUC keynote ends at 6. We started at 6, but the EUC keynote ran long. Plus, it was like a 15-minute walk between, so we didn't start till like 6:30. So they actually kicked us out at 8 o'clock. Very strict.
Oh, my goodness.
On the rules
here.
Oh,
wow.
So we didn't get our final session in, and so we'll have to figure out how to do that via video or something like that. But fun event, and just talking about using the Blast protocol and VDI to remote like F1, like Forza Racing games, the force feedback steering wheels. And,
oh, wow. You can actually extend that into, so it's more than just a video protocol. You can send haptic information with
that. Yeah, because it's USB remoting. Yep, uh-huh. Yeah,
that's nifty.
And all the tuning that the guy had, Johan van Amersfoort is the guy who did that, and all the engineering he did with NVIDIA just to tune Blast for this very low latency, high frame rate use case. We had a session from Benny Tritch, who was talking about Rex Analytics, which is a community product. Rex stands for Remote Experience. And they built this product where they actually use a frame grabber to record the client experience of various
protocols. Actually, yeah, not just looking at the latency or jitter, but actually
right, and then seeing how it happens. And what's interesting, their playback shows side-by-side videos, but they also show real-time, like, the analytics of, you know, the frame loss and frame rates and network utilization, GPU utilization, all these things. And you see things like the data looks fine.
Yeah.
Like, our frame rate's fine, our data, it's all fine, but the video is weird. Like, for example, there's this fishbowl GL animation, and it starts, like, green. The water's orange for a few seconds before it turns blue. And it's like, oh, well, the color lookup table hasn't been downloaded to the client yet. So, and these are things you can't see in the numbers.
Wow.
And the vendors kind of deny, but then you show. No.
Well, and the challenge also is a lot of monitoring products, typically an infrastructure, will sample like every 5 minutes or every,
yeah.
And voice and video streaming, all it takes is 6 seconds of a bad experience. And people say, well, that was garbage. You know,
yeah. And what people don't understand with like, because they compare, oh, I can use Netflix and all that kind of stuff, but all that stuff buffers. This is real time stuff. When
yeah,
you're
real
doing
time
remoting. You can't, yeah. You know, you can't buffer. So anyway, he showed this whole project and had all these side by side videos and showed like the effects of latency and GPU and no GPU and all this stuff using the latest Horizon 7.6 and the latest versions of Blast. Hmm. So it's stuff like that. It's just like these like goofball little side science projects. We all got together, a bunch of nerds. There's about 100 of us.
Yeah.
Drinking beers and eating pork-based, bacon and bacon-based
hamon.
Products.
Yeah, I saw someone actually carving hamon on here, and like you see like the leg. I'm like, yeah, only in Spain.
I don't know what this is. I just think of Ron Swanson, like, I don't know what you are, but I'm going to attempt to eat the entire thing.
There we go. There we go.
You mentioned Johan, and it's funny because he works hard. He does a lot of great things. He wrote an awesome book, but he will forever be known as the guy with the cool Back to the Future VDI t-shirt.
Yes, yes, absolutely. His book, by the way, was the number one best-selling book at VMworld US.
I believe it should be. That was on my nightstand at VMworld US, and I was reading it. And I actually had a customer discussion about VDI the next week. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to give them this book, and it will probably cover 95% of our discussion.
I think you're right.
Yeah, good guy. I was going to ask about the protocol. Are we back to protocol differentiation? Because for a long time, you know, you had the protocol wars, the early days of ICA versus PC over IP. Then it's, we're all going to use some H.264 variant. I think there's now H.265. Is there still room for differentiation at the protocol level?
I don't believe that's a real selling case because every single person can, I can take any protocol and find the perfect scenario that makes it look like child's play garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And another scenario that makes it look awesome, you know?
So unless you're on an oil rig in space, you know, over a K-band, you probably are not.
Yeah, and it's I'm just thinking, I'm sure that was a Futurama episode. You know, the thing is, so even what Benny was doing, it wasn't necessarily comparing like, oh, here's Blast versus HGX, you know, versus RDP. It's just like, here's what a GPU can do. Here's the effects latency has. You know, all the protocols are really good
trying
nowadays.
Trying to squeeze the experience better.
Yeah, and especially the GPU thing is huge because a lot of executives are like, oh, we don't have graphical applications. It's just Office. We don't need a GPU.
Yeah, and then you have, I remember that conversation. We did a VDI rollout, PC server, rolled out zero clients. This one exec's like, Google Earth runs like crap. And I'm like, oh, that was something you wanted to do? Yeah, that's
yeah.
And this is
how does your Excel
ago.
Work? Does your yeah. Excel work?
Well, but the thing is also what people don't really understand. Is
web browsers are GPU accelerated now. Like even Explorer and Chrome are GPU.
Well, it's funny. I'm gonna take a line from Trump. Like what a lot of people don't know is, which means what I just learned is what I just learned since joining VMware talking to the Blast team. So if you put a GPU in, it actually does the Blast encoding in GPU.
Oh, yeah. Which there's is H.264.
More, not even H.264. I mean, it could be, or H.265, which we just announced the show this week.
Awesome.
But even without that, even for regular screen non-GPU and accelerated, you know, the actual mathematics to encode and compress the video stream, of course, works better in a GPU. So yeah. Not only does that free up CPU space, which is typically your like maxed resource on a VDI host.
General graphics rendering.
For the encoding, the protocol encoding, it will cut 80 milliseconds out of the round trip, out of the protocol time.
Wow. That is noticeable in experience. Especially, if you've ever been a gamer and you added 80 milliseconds. And,
yeah, because it's just it's the rendering pipeline, and everyone so focuses on these remoting protocols, like what's your network latency, and they're using all these network latency
tools.
It's
not even about CPU overhead. I didn't realize that there was that much latency in that pipeline.
Because
wow.
You don't think about how long did it take for those for the application to say, I want these pixels to be black until they actually go out the back pipe of the machine.
That's interesting.
And what's also interesting is a lot of people, we argue about what is an acceptable latency. And it depends on all a million different scenarios, but typically it's 250 milliseconds, give or take.
Yeah.
80 is like a third of that.
Yeah.
So I can give you back a third of the latency we're arguing about. Now maybe you're pushing, you know, a use case up into the 300, 350 milliseconds to be still usable. That's a game changer. That's a game changer.
I was connecting. I don't honestly actually use VDI that often, just because at VMware we have so many applications that are web based. I use Workspace ONE, but I actually logged in from Bangalore the other day when I was out there, and I was like, this is actually a pretty good experience.
Yeah.
And maybe it was the GPU offload or something else that was helping that.
Well, you know, and I don't use VDI either. And I think that's... I
wasn't expecting that.
Oh, God, I mean, no. I would hate to use VDI as my primary...
Oh, it's your primary.
No, I mean, I've got no use case.
Hmm.
Like, I use two apps, Office and Firefox. You know, a Chromebook is fine for me. A Mac is fine.
Yeah. No, I mean, I got my new laptop as a VMware employee. I got my Mac, and there's Office, and there's a web browser. And
I'm done. I'm a very basic employee in that sense. And that's, you know, this is sort of the evolution of VDI, and this is the drum that I've been beating for 10 years. You know, I did that book back in the day.
Oh, I love the VDI delusion.
Thank you.
I have a copy of that.
It's my only hardcover book. That's how important it was to me, that topic. But remember, the VDI delusion, the subtitle of that book was essentially like why, you know, kind of VDI failed to live up to the hype and what the future enterprise desktop will really look like. And the point was not, it was not saying that VDI is garbage or there's no use case.
Yeah.
VDI absolutely has a use case. It's just, it's going to be a small piece of the overall picture. And there's
we should have declared victory when we got 20% of users on VDI instead of trying to march for 100.
We haven't gotten 20%. As an industry, isn't it? It's not, nor should it be.
Yeah.
But if VDI is one piece, and it's kind of like saying, like, you know, do you buy a car because of the alternator that's in it? No. But show me a car without an alternator, and it's like a broken car.
Yeah.
So, like, we need VDI. VDI will be around forever, as long as there's Windows applications, which, again, will be around forever. So, VDI is important, but there's lots of ways to deliver end-user computing, which is why everything we're doing is about more than VDI.
I haven't thought about it like that. That's pretty awesome.
Well, I mean, look around us. I mean, vendor-wise, I can see ThinPrint here, obviously, you know, and Lakeside, two vendors that I associate very much with VDI. And then at the same time, you go over there, and Google has a large booth here entirely devoted to basically trying to pitch, hey, Chrome is your enterprise app gateway.
Yeah.
So it's...
And that's exactly it, because, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, we've got different application types. There's web apps, there's native apps on, you know, five different platforms now. And, you know, some apps are Windows apps that you need to use from non-Windows platforms. So VDI, and when I say VDI, it could be...
Include app streaming.
And exactly. The single app publishing off of Horizon, you know, RDSH type technologies. You know, and there are some scenarios where, you know, sometimes you do have users who need full Windows desktops that are connecting from all over the world, and it's just...
You've got security or sovereignty of data or data...
Yeah, exactly.
Data gravity issues where the data has to stay in that data center, so we have to stream the experience out.
Exactly. And even, you know, I used to say, oh, but... You know, for compliance reasons, you can enable local encryption and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, as you saw in the news in the past month, basically every local encryption has been cracked, except for Mac with the latest, like, T2 encryption chip.
Yep.
But everything else, they can actually, like, open the machine up, even if it's been powered down, like, carbon freeze the chip, scrape off the surface of it, and, like, pull the data, the keys out of it.
You didn't see the white paper that came out this week, did you?
Oh, no.
Oh, it's even better. So self-encrypting drives, it was in the Netherlands. They went after the two biggest vendors in that space who make the drives. Apparently, one of which they found a backdoor password that was just at the factory. And you know what that password was? It was an empty string. I mean, that's my luggage combination right there. So the other ones, yeah, there was an ATA command set that just says, give me the data, and it forks it over. Apparently, self-encrypting drives are useless.
So this is a perfect example. I'm talking about something that happened a month ago. You're talking about something that happened a week ago.
Yeah.
At some point, people just say, you know what? F this. I can't deal with it. Give them VDI and, you know, be done with it. And it's interesting because the costs of VDI have come down. Not because of any VDI engineering, just because of, like, that's how stuff works in the world.
We have 48 core processors instead of four.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember the old days with Windows XP. We're like, all right, so we're going to give everyone half a gig of RAM. And half of that's not going to actually exist. It'll be swapping the disk. And, I mean, we used to make a lot of compromises to deliver a desktop experience.
So, Brian, what made you come to VMware?
Do you want how much time do we have? the short version, the medium. So, you know, I left BrianMadden.com 2016, spent a year and a half not working, driving around in a camper van. By the beginning of this year, beginning of 2018, I was ready to sort of get a job again. Initially, I thought I wanted to work at a cool company. So I was like looking at Amazon and Google and these kinds of things. I was pretty ready to accept with Amazon, just doing like an evangelist in their workspaces, like their DAZ kind of group.
Sure, yeah.
And I ran into Sean Bass at a conference kind of randomly and unexpectedly. And I you know, I've known him for a long time. Sean Bass is the CTO, VMware's CTO for end user computing.
Yep.
I'm like, oh, dude, I got news. I'm going to Amazon. So we just talked about that and everything. And the next day, we didn't talk about VMware really at all. I just wanted to ask him how he likes working in a big vendor, big company. And he says, the next day he texted me. He's like, dude, I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't kind of say, you know, if you want to be an evangelist, talk about stuff, we'd love to have you. And by the way, you know, everything you wrote about, like in the VDI delusions, like what needs to happen, we're doing that. Yeah. So you should at least check out what we're doing before you say yes. And he goes, and if you don't want to, that's cool. Like, no offense taken. You'll do awesome Amazon. They're fine. You know, that's so, you know, so we talked for like an hour, a couple days later, and he sort of explained where Workspace ONE was and the vision.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm intrigued. So I went out to Palo Alto, spent a few days there talking to folks, some of the PMs and stuff. And I'm like, wow. Yeah, you guys are doing it. Yeah. Yes, please.
I had never seen Workspace ONE until I signed up as an employee 3 years ago. And I was like, okay, where's all my apps? What is this witchcraft? Like,
it's true. I never used Workspace ONE before. I mean, it was announced like 2 years ago, so I kind of knew of it, broadly speaking. But, you know, my onboarding process, like, I live in New York City. And so I did at the time. And my first day was like working on my apartments. I had my own laptop. Sean texted me my first username and password, like, as the welcome employee, and gave me the URL of our portal and said, take it from here. And within 20 minutes, everything's set up.
Yeah.
And then it was crazy too, because I have a Mac. That's my own Mac I've been using forever. I figured I should get a Windows machine and a Chromebook and stuff also, you know, since that's what we do. So I got a Chromebook from the company, and I just bought a Windows machine from Amazon because I wanted like a different one than was made available to me. But I just bought it with my own money from Amazon, you know, get it home, open it up. First question is Cortana, hello, like, license agreement. Second question is, you know, what's your email address? I do bmadden at vmware.com. Third screen pops up, and it's the Workspace ONE logon screen asking for my RSA two-factor authentication.
Wow.
And I'm like, of course, I'm like looking around.
Who's
like,
watching? Who's what is this?
There's a camera in the corner.
This machine is like,
Sean Bass has broken into my apartment.
Yeah, like, I bought this from Amazon with my own money.
Yeah.
It's been powered on for literally 30 seconds. And now I'm like, so,
is that the auto drive or what's the?
There's a couple of things. So, because what happened next is that, so I was like, I did that. And then it asked me, how do I want this machine to be managed? You know, let my organization manage it, or I'll manage it myself. I pushed a button and said, let my organization manage it. And then it went through, installed Office 365, like the, you know, Workspace ONE agent, VPN client, upgraded the license from enterprise or from pro to enterprise, reboot, boom. And that is something. So there's Autopilot, which we support with Workspace ONE. That's Microsoft thing. And a very closely related cousin to Autopilot is called the Windows Out of Box experience. And basically what happened is, because I entered bmadden at vmware.com, internally we use Azure Active Directory, our own VMware IT department.
Yes.
So when it hits a Microsoft activation server, it says, vmware.com, that's one of our tenants. They kind of, that puts us together and off we go.
Redirects, yeah, that makes sense.
So Autopilot is a very similar program. With Autopilot, the person who owns the machine, like the IT department, provides a device ID to Microsoft.
Oh, yeah, when you do the purchasing. And the OEM can sync that.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different ways to get it up there. But Autopilot, it doesn't ask you how you want to be managed. it just says, oh, this machine belongs to these people, so the company is managing it. In this case, since it was a BYO machine, they gave me the choice. And depending on how our stuff is set up, of course, you know, the reason this actually happened is because I happen to be within the right group. I think because I'm in the CTO department, I was in some pilot, like early pilot. We're actually now in the process of rolling this out to all employees. But at the time, 7 months ago, I was just in a test group.
Well, in the traditional provisioning, a lot of companies is, oh, I want a new laptop. Okay, they're going to go to the VAR. They're going to order that. It's going to get shipped to wherever the IT group is.
Exactly. Not where the user is.
Yeah, not where the user is. They're going to go do some stuff. And then maybe a week or two later, they get around to shipping it. I had friends at oil gas companies. They'd sign up as a new employee. They'd be lucky if they had a desk phone
right.
in the first month,
yeah.
let alone
yeah.
a computer. I mean, just sitting there basically like, I got nothing for like an entire month was a thing.
And the way it works, you know, it's because you image it, but then the image is probably old. So then you're doing all these post image yep. patches. Then you're,
oh, and you're in this
it.
Department. You need this app group.
You're updating and patching and updating and patching and updating and patching. And then eventually you're like, okay, re-image it.
Small offering to the SCCM gods yeah. of old. Yeah. And, you know.
So the days of imaging machines are going away. And in fact, one thing we announced at VMworld in Las Vegas a few months ago is a partnership with Dell, where so now you can just say, if you're buying machines from Dell, you can look in your Workspace ONE tree and sort of say like where the machine's going to go in the tree and just kind of right-click and pull out a config that when the machine's being built or ordered, you put that up there. And then essentially Dell at their factory kind of does that connection into your Workspace ONE environment and gets everything set up. So the employee can just open it and take off and they're ready to go.
Out of the box.
But it's not imaging, right? We're not building images. We're just...
Well, and this isn't even just about new employee. It's, you know, my laptop gets stolen, destroyed, yeah. catches on fire or something. And it's being able to just go and be able to get back to work that much quicker is
and this is why this is possible. Like you can go now to you know Best Buy and buy a machine, and with this out of box experience, you know, like within an hour be back up and have everything you need. And you know, because Windows now is very sophisticated, there's this whole trusted boot thing, there's like this Windows code integrity thing. So one of the characteristics that Windows reports is like, you know, how trustworthy is it basically? So that's something that Workspace ONE can see. And then when you're setting conditional access, maybe you only allow access to certain data from machines whose configurations are trusted and, you know, things like that. So
what's taking the old network access control used for VPN to the next level, really? So
yeah, because network access control needs to die.
VPN needs to die.
Yeah.
And, oh, please, yeah.
And the reason, and everyone believes this is not a me thing. This is like Gartner's talking about it, Google, BeyondCorp, AnyCorp, you know, Zero Trust, because yep. we can't.
It was generally running in a Java app, I think, when I had a Cisco VPN endpoint. I was like, wait a minute, why is this?
It's just the concept, because, you know, you can't automatically trust a device because it's inside the walls, and there's plenty of devices I trust fully that are outside the wall.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a great point, actually. I never thought about it like that.
So we just take the trust boundary down to the machine and just say, man, because think about this. We do all this work to make sure users can work from Starbucks on unsecured Wi-Fi.
Right.
By trusting the machine, setting up all these protections and this encryption, all this kind of stuff. Well, if we make it so that users can be fully productive on Starbucks in public with unsecured Wi-Fi.
Why do we lower any security boundaries that they found a plug in an office?
Right, exactly. So it's like I'm an advocate for make your office wide open Wi-Fi. I mean, if you want to just have a very simple password authentication so that, like, you know, people on the street don't like
steal your internet or go.
Yeah, but that's not a security thing. That's
just
your
Wi-Fi to host a seed box.
Right. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, exactly. But the real thing, exactly. But you know, if you have to make it so your machines can be securely and fully used from anywhere, why not just do that with inside the walls of your corporation as well?
I love it.
And in fact, that's how I always connect when I'm in the office in the VMware guest Wi-Fi. I guess there's an employee Wi-Fi maybe, but
who needs it?
I connect. Yeah. My experience in the office is exactly the same as it is at my house.
Yeah. Brian, one more question for you before you leave. I know you wrote a great book, The VDI Delusion. I'm sure everyone has read it or at least seen that book. You've done an amazing job presenting. You're well known in this industry. I mean, you've built a personal brand. It's pretty impressive. And I wanted to ask you, what advice would you give to somebody who is in this career of ours and trying to create some sort of personal brand and do well in their job? What kind of advice do you have for someone like that?
So first of all this stuff, there's a book by Tom Peters called Brand You from like 1997 or something like that. And I read that book or 98, somewhere in there. Whatever the BrianMadden.com domain original registration date is the day that I read that.
Oh, wow.
I think there's an article on Fast Company or something. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do this. BrianMadden.com. Yeah. And so, but at the end of the day, content is king. And, you know, there's so many, like, blogs. Like, I don't believe, I read all these things from these social media experts. I'm using air quotes in here.
Yeah. If you have to self-label yourself as a social media expert on your LinkedIn profile or as like a content guru, then I feel like you're failing.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's, you know, just content is king.
Content is king.
For me, you know, in the original days, it was writing the books. And then it was, you know, like blogging and just being consistent and writing a lot of original stuff, not just re-blogging, just newsfeed, kind of republishing, that kind of thing.
Right.
And look at people who have come into the space, like kind of out of nowhere, so to speak, like Johan. Bearded VDI junkie, whatever he's called. I never heard the name Johan von Amersfoort before, like, I joined VMware because I think he kind of came into prominence in the year and a half I was living in a van. But he wrote a book. I mean, he's blogging, he's creating content, he's speaking at shows, he wrote a book, and so content is king. And so
he's going to be the next Brian Madden, but a better Brian Madden.
And it's, you know, every generation stands on the shoulders of the generation before it. And it's time. And like, if you look at, there's so many people who, you know, were speaking at Briforum and speaking at some of these early events who now have websites with their names in it. And people are going independent and, you know, doing these things. And like, I didn't invent any of these concepts. Like, I didn't invent the concept of a blog. I didn't invent the concept of a personal brand. I didn't invent Citrix. I didn't invent any of those things. I just looked at all what that was and thought I can add some, you know, perspective to this. And then, you know, like, I did my thing. I had a good run for 20 years, and then it's time for someone else to take it and do their next 20 years.
Well, I feel like this ultimate success of brand is actually selling your name off to someone else. So,
I mean, true. Although there were some very tangible things we sold, like the Briforum conference, the website with X numbers of visitors, ad revenue, and that kind of stuff. And you have to, by the way, you have to be true to yourself at the end of the day. So, speaking of that, you know, an authenticity is what people connect to.
I remember a fairly kind of angry but very authentic rant about your opinion about how VDI was being treated by a certain vendor when you quit a certain influencer program. That's one of the most authentic things, but it made a very big point.
And I stand, and for those of you who are not remembering this, I wrote an article about Microsoft, like, four reasons why Microsoft is screwing the industry and why I'm quitting the MVP program.
Wow.
Like, it's very specific. That article was actually covered in Wired because it was like, wow, what's happening at Microsoft, you know? And some of the things have since changed, although I think the market has changed. I don't think they changed because of me. It's like when Kramer went back to work because he was on strike for like 20 years. Like, you had a job? He's like, yeah, I was fighting for higher minimum wage. He's like, what'd you fight for? $5 an hour? It's like, and we got it. It's like... That's what the minimum wage is now. It's like, and now you know who to thank. But everything that happened, you know, that I was mad about with Microsoft, it's sort of evolved now. But I think that's because the cloud has changed the world and all this kind of stuff. But back in the day.
If all roads lead to Azure, then they better figure out how to license VDI in it.
Exactly.
The core of that.
You're welcome, world.
Yeah. Brian, thanks so much for joining us today. And enjoy the rest of your VMworld. And you have an open invitation on the podcast. Anytime you want to come back, we'd love to have you.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, guys. It's a pleasure.
All right. Yeah. So that's Brian Madden. Excellent conversation with him. that gentleman is he's very interesting. I mean, brilliant. The fact that he's been, and also fearless. I love the fact that he's just been unapologetic about his about his thoughts around VDI and this whole industry in general. I was very impressed with him.
Well, and I love how he reaches beyond VDI and he looks at it as a holistic, you know, all the different things, mobile application management, all the things. They follows. And I encourage anyone who, even if you don't care about VDI, if you care about application or application experience delivery, to go watch that session, because he really outlines, you know, what is VMware's strategy.
Yeah.
In a really great way.
Yeah, I thought it was funny how he said that, he himself is just a typical user. He just uses, what do you say? He uses browser and Office, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I use a little more than that because I actually, for the podcast, but yeah, but for the most part, I don't really need, you know, this high-powered environment. And I really love that conversation we had with him around, you know, the VPN, you know, the whole concept of security not being limited to just a brick-and-mortar, you know, location, but, you know, being tied to the actual user, not the location. I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, it's just treating, everyone should be on the equivalent of, I guess, wireless, because you already have everyone working, you already have people working from coffee shops. So treating your network as a, you know, a very binary security zone world is really very limiting in this day and era.
Very cool. All right. Well, those are the two conversations that we have for you this week. Stay tuned. We've got plenty more coming up. Another thing I wanted to mention is it's that time of year again, John, to vote for the top blogs of 2018. And that also means the top podcast. And so we humbly request a vote from you for the Virtually Speaking podcast. You can Google top VBlog 2018, and I'm sure you'll come up with a site. But we'll leave a link to the voting on the show notes of this podcast as well. And so, yeah, give us a vote if you listen and you like us. What else, John?
There actually was an interesting M&A in the EUC world, but I don't think you really want to talk with me about FS Logic and how it makes Office 365 suck less in VDI. So,
hold on, let me get my pillow. Just kidding.
Well, it's interesting because it's funny in the context of Brian Madden, because Brian, one of the other writers at BrianMadden.com was Gabe Newth, and Gabe Newth went and joined FS Logic because, again, they made the Office 365 not suck for VDI.
Yeah.
And then Jack Madden also worked for, you know, Brian Madden. And so now you have Brian Madden, who doesn't actually have any affiliation with Brian Madden. You have Jack Madden, who does. And then you have Gabe Newth, who is the other writer, who now works for Microsoft. So it's like 5 years ago, no one would have predicted any of these people would have gone these directions.
But yeah,
I guess the nature of the EUC world, there's changes continue to roll. So
yeah, that's true. This industry is that it's a small industry. You never know who's going to be where, right? All right, John, that's going to do it for me. Anything else before we take off?
That's it.
Sweet.
All right, so let's start cooking some turkeys. Later, man.
Absolutely, John. Happy Thanksgiving, my friend.
Happy Thanksgiving.
All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Johan, Marcos, and Brian Madden for joining us this week. We're back next week, but until then, gobble gobble.
Enough of this jibber jabber.